The Bee Gees there on KPTZ, and it is 12:30 here at KPTZ in Port Townsend, and as usual on Thursdays, I am here. I'm Taylor Clark, and I'm here with John Morrow, Port Townsend City Manager, and co-host of Bureaucracy Now.
Hey, Taylor, good to see you again.
And I want to remind listeners, I'm sure our regular, you're going to have to get that. We need a new studio.
And I was going to tell you all that.
And so I want to remind listeners that that we are available via email if you have questions.
Yes.
dj@kptz.org. I am keeping an eye on it.
And please, folks, I'm a public servant. You could always email me directly at jmauro@cityofpt.us.
Yes. And you will be available to answer questions. So today we have with us Carrie Height, who is the Director of Parks and Recreation Strategy.
That's correct, Taylor. Thank you so much.
Oh, I don't have you on. There you go. Now I have you on.
That's correct. Thank you so much for the introduction. And also with John, you can email me directly at chite@cityofpt.us.
Look at that.
And Carrie was with us 2 weeks ago?
I think it was about two weeks ago.
And then you've recently, there was an interview with you. I suddenly can't remember the name of the show. And with Jim Burke. Yeah.
Right. And the Monday show.
Yeah. So this is something I think we want to keep talking about because we are up to our necks in the process of considering what to do with the golf course and also Mountain View Commons and that sort of thing.
Correct.
Full court press. I mean, you know, usually people hear about this stuff because we keep, I mean, Carrie, this is how many times have you been on talking about this? Quite a few.
Yeah, four,
you know?
Maybe three.
And
four.
We mention it at council and, you know, we put it on Facebook and we put it on the website. But I always feel bad when people have passion and interest and they don't know that it's better to get involved before the decision.
Right, than to get involved after the decision in a rear guard action and fight it.
Exactly. And the earlier the better on this, and that's why we're excited to talk about this open house and actually two open houses.
Right.
And I have to take it as a good sign, actually, riding up here just moments ago, there was a rainbow over the golf course, and I'm not making that up. Anybody from that vantage point will see. I think that bodes well for coming up with a solution as a community with everybody. There's a color for everybody, and what we're doing now is setting the table for ideas and involvement. No decisions will be made until at least the spring by City Council.
Okay, and I know there's a lot of there is. I'm sure there is misinformation too, and so I thought we should talk a little bit about misinformation. But I think my first question is, as someone who has not been involved in the process, other than peripherally in the discussions, are you far enough into this? You got an open house coming up, and are we going to see some? You know, people must be throwing ideas out there, and have some ideas sort of risen to the top that are sort of that you can maybe talk about what we're thinking about, what sorts of things we're thinking about?
Sure. And let me just clarify, excuse me. The first open house is next week. It's on Wednesday at Fort Worden Commons from 5 to 7 p.m. There's childcare. We're going to feed the kids, but we're not going to feed you if you're an adult. No, you'll get snacks. But the kids will have some dinner because it's kid dinner hour during that time. And then on Thursday, we have a virtual open house, and the link is on our website. And it's from 4:30 to 6 o'clock. And so if you're not comfortable gathering in large groups at the Fort Worden Commons, you can hop online on Thursday and be part of the same conversation. But to your point, Taylor, and to your question, this is the very first open house. So we're not going to come with a ton of ideas of everything the golf course could be with everybody's input. It's really a blank slate still for the first open house. We're gathering input. It's our way to gather input from the larger community. We've been doing smaller groups. We've been collecting comment cards online. We want to open it up for the general public to come in and give their ideas and to dream big and fill out some forms to dream big. We'll have a little survey that will be on the website the next morning after the open house, and I will get that out in a press release as well. But we just want to hear from everybody. The landscape architects that are working with us will bring some precedents, and what that means is they're going to bring some pictures of things that other golf courses have done to help generate some thoughts in our brain. Some of the comments and thoughts we have been getting are, one, keep it as a golf course. Two, keep it as open space. You know, don't develop on it.
Well, and those are not mutually exclusive.
No, right. They're not. Three, create some connections in the community. It's a big central campus, and can we have trails through there and meandering trails and exercise
right,
trails?
Right, which would be a change from what it is now, where it tends to it's not something that people just walk across.
That's correct. There's actually even signs that say golfers only, right? So there really is not welcoming of everybody in the community right now. And it's dangerous if they walk and there's somebody playing golf. So
okay, so keep the golf course, use
trail
it as open space, connections to the through the community.
Right. People are talking a little bit about affordable housing and some food resilience in our community. There's a big heightened awareness of climate change and what that's doing to our community. So whatever we do to be good stewards of the land and mm-hmm. be good stewards of the resources that we have on the land, be it water, putting pesticides on the ground, mowing, trying to really make it climate neutral or neutral in that sense.
And I also think, you know, back to my rainbow analogy, which is possibly not a good one, you know, it doesn't have to be one color. I mean, I think the thing about creativity in this community that I truly believe in, based on who I get to work with, and I'm looking at one of them right now, you know, the talents that people bring and kind of the creative minds here in our community, it's very possible we could satisfy a number of desires at the same time. Mm-hmm. And like you said earlier, you know, it's not mutually exclusive to even contain some degree of golf and all the other uses at the same time. So we want to keep our minds open as much as we can. I mean, right now we're in idea gathering mode, but I implore the community also to keep the mind open of like, how can we actually put a bunch of things in the same place and coexist?
I don't want to talk too much about who I am, but I grew up on a golf course, and that is actually a wonderful place for a child to grow up, because a great deal of the time there's no golfers, and that means you're not supposed to,
yeah,
but you can go on the golf course.
It was my first job actually at a golf course. I don't really talk about myself very much in my history of golf, but I was on the high school golf team.
Oh, really?
Okay. I could hit a ball pretty far,
okay,
even though I'm not a very big man. It was my first job for any money when I was in junior high. I went and I collected golf balls from the driving range.
Oh, right. Well, I did some of that too. Yeah. And I would collect them from the lot next door and then sell them. But
oh, it's far more entrepreneurial than I.
And I think there's some collecting that goes on adjacent to our golf course. You know, that
fits in the right of way. It's fair game.
Not all the balls go where they're supposed to, right?
Exactly. I know that very well. I also wanted to put out there, you asked earlier about information and misinformation. Carrie and the team, but really Carrie, has done just an awesome job using our existing communications infrastructure, our website. And anything you can want to wonder or learn about the golf course current and historical is there. And in fact, the whole process, all the meetings to the stakeholder meeting group, agendas, materials, schematics, I mean, that is the place to go if you want to learn more. And we understand that not everyone wants to dig deep into the history, because there's a long history, or know all the details, because there are a lot of details. But if you want a snapshot, we tried to build that site as a way to just kind of click in as deep as you want to go to understand as much as you want to. And it's all there. So again, that is cityofpt.us. You can go right to our website. It's actually the graphic right on the homepage where you can click on that.
I just saw it on your phone there, that nice little logo. It shows a
in-house homemade logo.
Right. Yeah. No, what is that? Crossed golf clubs? Is there a pool?
It's a crossed golf clubs. There is a pool. There, it looks like pickleball. There's a park, some dogs.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be all-inclusive, but it's meant to represent a smattering of ideas that might be coming to the fore here.
I mentioned misinformation, and I think, I know. I'm just going to ask, give me your favorite piece of misinformation that's out there and set us straight on it. I'm looking at Carrie on this one. No?
You know, there was a good conversation that I had with several people at our project launch, and one person was convinced that you could walk across the golf course anytime, any day. These other folks that were talking said, well, not really, because you get hit with a golf ball. Well, and I said, yeah, you know, those aren't accessible trails for everybody all the time. They might be in the morning.
They felt that you could walk across it from a legal standpoint, or from the standpoint of amenity,
of being open and welcoming for everybody.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe they weren't thinking about the danger of being hit by a golf ball.
Yeah. And of course, the other folks that were part of the conversation were like, well, no, I don't feel really comfortable at the golf course because I might get hit by a golf ball. And so there was some misinformation that was out that, yeah, it's open space. It's everybody's welcome. It's everybody can walk on it. And really, that's not the case. It's really... It exclusive for golfers right now that
well,
when you walk around.
Although it's sometimes shared. I know I sometimes see cross country meets going on there, which is very exciting when I see it. You know, all those kids running along.
Me too. As a runner, I'd love to get my feet on that course.
Yeah. Well, just in the past couple of weeks when we've had snow, there was cross country skiers on the course, which
and
was pretty
because
exciting.
They're not golfing then.
Yeah. Yeah, they're using it for something else, but they're using.
I used
it.
To do a lot of cross country skiing on the golf course I grew up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, big open space.
It's a big open space. Yep. It's not being used for anything else.
Right.
Yep. And I mean, I can't speak for any group that's been part of the engagement. Some have been very engaged. But I can say from some perspectives of golfers I've heard from, you know, there are open minds to how to create greater accessibility beyond golf and coexist with the existing use of golf. So I think it should be said that I applaud those who are open to trying to work out how to do a bit of everything. That's going to be important.
Does this come with, you mentioned the landscape architects are coming with some ideas that have been tried in other jurisdictions. And is one of them having golf coexist with trail access?
Yeah, it's what they would call a hybrid solution. So you keep some semblance of golf, but you have other amenities as well that opens the course for people to use it.
Can I go for my favorite misinformation?
Yes.
There's two topics which are both hard to auger into, but I'm going to do it just out of diligence for the truth here.
Well, I thought we should take them head on rather than wait and hear.
And I don't have any good, it's not like there's a clear answer to either of these, but I think, you know, one is a question of conversation that we hear often around how much is either subsidizing the golf course or how much it's making and the kind of the financials. And I think the easiest way to put it is it's complicated because there is some responsibility for paying for, you know, water and for maintenance and infrastructure. And there's also, you know, another part of the conversation around how much, you know, philanthropic donations are garnered through community related events put on through golf fundraisers. How many volunteer hours are put in for upkeep, and then actually what the factual requirements are of the lease, which is 6% of gross revenue or $10,000, I think.
6.5%.
Sorry, yeah. So you know there's some hard numbers, but then there's some context there about, you know, and I want to test this out, probably not good to do on live radio, but test out you know, aside from it's complicated, it's probably a story of, well, it's not like there's a clear, this is a cash cow. In fact, it's not for the city or otherwise. And it's also not
a lot of money flows out of the golf course.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I'd also say to some degree, depending on what you count for, you know, things that you're paying for, there's some degree of investment, but to actually make it work for any means, including golf and anything else, a significant amount of investment would be needed. And that's what former studies, and I'm going to guess, you know, future assessments will say, to bring this up to snuff to be competitive for golf or to bring it up to snuff to be another use, it's going to require investment. So I don't want people to get distracted by it pays for itself or it's highly subsidized or, you know.
Or it's going to cost us a bundle.
Yeah, because I think that's maybe not the right question when we're talking about the finances. For me, it's more what, you know, there's some lessons to learn from the past and how much money has been generated or put in. But actually, moving forward, what do we need to be thinking about for investment?
Would that be in the form of like a bond issue or something?
I think we're way far early to even talk about that. But I think you know that there are multiple angles into that, you know, and not all on the city. So I think it leads me to the other point I wanted to make, which was there's a predetermined, you know, design already out there. I've heard that a lot.
Oh, okay.
And I'm always curious what the design is because it helps me understand.
Because it'd be great if you knew it.
Because it'd be great if I knew about it. Exactly. But I think, you know, the I've heard criticism and I respect it, but I counter gently with we should feel confident enough as a community to ask the question, does a community asset serve everybody the way we want it to? And if the answer is yes, at the other end of the process, we'll keep doing what we're doing. If the answer is no, or it depends, we should have the confidence as a community to work together through the challenging conversation of different needs and wants, different time horizons, and get to an answer that benefits the most people for the longest time. And that's really the duty of the city to steward that conversation. So there is no hidden, this is what we think should happen. There is a definite, overt belief. And I'll say this is where, you know, I'll wear this one. It's our obligation and our duty to have that conversation as a community in the best interest of everybody. And that's what we're trying to do here.
I'm just going to let that sit for a minute. That's a good statement, John.
Can I take this mic and drop it on the floor? No, it wasn't meant to be a mic drop.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
Hey, you had your Obama moment there. Well, I'm. What about the misinformation that, you know, there's something in the way the land was given to the city originally that specifies how it's to be used? And I've heard various kind of colors of that one floating around. And what is the reality of that one?
Yeah, we have pored over the deeds. Our landscape architects have pored over the deeds. The only language that we have found that restricts the use of the land is that it's to be used for municipal purposes. There's also one parcel in there that says it should be used as Hastings Park. And that's new information. I just saw that last week.
Do we have a Hastings Park?
We don't have a Hastings Park, but it was land that was donated to be used as a park called Hastings Park. That was the stipulation within a deed.
And that's a portion of the land.
It's a portion of the land, correct.
Okay.
So park, municipal purposes.
Okay, that actually sets that one to rest in some ways, because every flavor I've heard, you know, says, no, it must be a golf course.
And yeah, no, there's no restriction on the land to be used as a golf course at this point.
I hope it sets it to rest. I feel like I'm going to hold some skepticism there because...
Oh, right. It won't.
We need everybody to be tuning into KPTZ at all times, and then we'll be clear. But you might have missed a small fraction of our listener audience here.
And I would remind any listeners that are listening who want to bring this discussion to their friends that immediately following my 3 o'clock when I finish Blues Journey, I'll be pulling it off of the audio logger, and we will be publishing it on our website, the half hour here of Bureaucracy Now. And I also want to remind listeners that if you're just joining us, I'm Taylor Clark. I'm here with my co-host, John Morrow, and we have with us Carrie Height, Director of Parks and Recreation Strategy. And we're talking about the process of looking at the golf course and environs, and maybe we should talk about Mountain View a little bit.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Where does Mountain View fit into this?
Yeah, Mountain View is really a conglomeration of a lot of things, but it serves as a community hub, and it's owned by the school district, who really has an interest in making it be a community hub. And we just think that there's some adjacencies that could be gained
from this
conversation.
Yeah.
Exactly. There could be some complementary uses, adjacencies. So we're not delving into this conversation to kick anybody out over here. We're just looking at the land use at this point. And
well, because we have some important organizations here. We have a food bank. We have the police department. Yeah. We have the community pool.
Red Cross, YMCA.
We have a small radio station.
We do. Well, it's funny you say that because I was going to try to awkwardly, it's not hard for me to be awkward really, but to say, you know, one of the reasons why we want to take a master planning approach is to not do favoritism on who might, you know, when you move to Fort Worden,
right,
there are a lot of people who want to line up and claim the space, and that's great.
That's good to know.
It's great to know. And so a huge appreciation for those who are saying, let's be part of this network of community-facing organizations. But gosh, can you imagine how hard it is for the city to make that call?
About who it should be.
Who should this be and why? So we want to take a holistic approach to what could this be as a whole unit. And that'll help guide our decisions about how we use the space.
The whole complex.
The whole complex, exactly.
I want to mention the dog park. I don't want to forget the dog park. I think that's a...
Sage wants to.
Yeah, Sage wants to go. He regularly looks out the window longingly at the dog park and doesn't understand why he can't go on his own.
Yeah. It's another question, but
okay. I want to kind of get back to the pool part of it.
That's
an important thing. We're thinking about a new pool, right?
We are. There's a parallel process. It's a different process
than
the golf course conversation in Mountain View campus, but it's called Healthier Together, and the county is with us on this, as
the
hospital district and the port, the Y, Jefferson Aquatic Coalition, the school district. We're all on the same table talking about how to make this happen, how to rebuild the pool, how to bring a health and wellness center to Port Townsend.
And are we thinking the pool may be in a different location?
We have a couple different sites we're looking at, but ideally it would be a public-owned land so that we don't have to face land acquisition costs and that it becomes a part of where we can build something. There's, you know, it could be at the same location. It could be down by the dog park, and we move the dog park up. It could be up by the hospital. There's just a lot of different things we need to consider when talking about land and where to site it.
But that is a different, that's a parallel process.
It is a parallel process, correct.
And does that have community input?
Yes, it will.
Component, but it's earlier in the, you're in an earlier phase with that, so we.
We are in an earlier phase, so we'll probably do some stepping stone public meetings as we go along.
It's a good opportunity, too, to say, not to that I need to caveat anything that Carrie said, but taken out of context, I've often seen this, even in print media, there's a decision to place the pool on the golf course, or there's a decision to put... I just wanted to be clear that we're having that conversation openly because we're throwing ideas around. And so it doesn't mean there's a predetermined outcome. But out of transparency, we want to say, look, we are looking at different sites. We're thinking through this as a process and as a community. There won't be a decision about that without a huge amount of public input, knowledge. It'll have to go to city council. It'll have to have buy-in from all the partners that Carrie mentioned. So before we start kind of auguring into defense on why it should be, you know, somewhere else or why that's a bad idea or even a good idea, let's just remember we're just having this conversation openly because that's, again, good public process.
Well said.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's always too short.
No, actually, that clock is fast.
Hey, there's a plug on something else I wanted to mention before we go.
Because we have 8 more minutes.
Oh, geez. Look at that.
We have to figure out what we're going to talk about next.
I suspect knowing each of you, we won't have a hard time.
We haven't completely solved the golf course.
That's not ours to solve.
No,
that's our community.
That's our community.
Yeah.
What else do you want to plug?
Well, it's just funny because as we were setting up, I got a quick note from somebody that we work closely with, and it kind of reminded me on a couple things. And sorry to make this abrupt transition, but I got a text from Aaron Berg, the executive director of the port. And as I was riding down here, I noticed that we were continuing to remove debris from the landslide that hit.
Across from the Bayview.
Yeah. And I just got the, good news because I was actually sitting with the fire chief as I watched Aaron, Commissioner Eisenhower, and Jake Beatty walk by. And I thought, what are they up to?
Right. That's an interesting combo.
Some of my favorite people.
Absolutely.
And then I got a text from Aaron that said, oh, we're going to take your landside debris to do beach nourishment at Point Hudson. Great recycling story. And so I just love how that means we work pretty well together as agencies, which I know, Aaron's been on the show and we talk about that. But it also reminds me, my goodness, our public works team, when I went by and kind of gave them the high five for, removal of that material to give to the port and to clear out of the way. I kind of quipped to a staff member like, hey, this is a, it's kind of a fun one. And she said, yeah, they're all really fun this week, and it's been a doozy. And I just want to at least publicly state, we have such a great public works team that handled snow that handled historic storm surge.
We had Steve King on last
week. Oh, that's right. That's right.
And we did. And he talked about the collapsing the interceptor line down and getting Seton Construction involved.
Exactly.
And apparently a truck disappeared into a hole.
Not
permanently. You got it back, right?
We did get it back. Yeah. Kind of a constellation of catastrophe, but aptly handled. And I'm sure Steve spoke to it well last week. Mm-hmm. But this is all on top of all the other stuff they do. And kind of during a time where a lot of folks are taking a holiday break, including myself.
Right. We were trying to take a holiday break. But no, everybody had to get in and drive drive snowplows and sanding trucks around. So I just love
it's like a little bit of a microscope of how a city works.
Right.
Where there's all these moving parts. And it's complicated and anything can happen. And at the core are the people. And the people are the ones who make it happen when the crisis comes. And I just want to salute the team and actually all our agencies, including the port, who work together with us. The PUD was just in. I mean, they've helped us out tremendously. Yeah. The county, indispensable collaboration with the county. So just those are the kinds of things that occasionally need mention on the air.
Well, and you've been, I know you and the other executive directors of these organizations have been kind of trying to build bridges and improve communication and get this sort of synergistic thing going.
The bridges are up. They're stable. Yeah. They've been built. Now we're just making sure we maintain them appropriately so that they will never fail.
Well, I like the idea that the debris from the slide is going down to Feta Beach, which has perhaps been pulled sluiced away a little bit by the recent King Tide.
Exactly. I lost my favorite log on North Beach. I felt like, oh, that big one went away. I was bummed.
Oh, you perhaps think they're permanent.
I know. Isn't that silly? As a former biologist, I feel like I should know better. Everything's ephemeral, Taylor, I got to tell you.
No, I've seen this on rivers where rocks get named, and then the rocks disappear, and people go, but it was house rock. How could it move? And it's like, no.
Yes.
So the logs definitely like to move along. Mm-hmm. And I think Steve and I discussed some of the trouble that he had with the King Tide with logs coming up underneath docks.
Yep. Yep.
And banging on the bottom of docks, which may have been why Jake Beatty was there.
Yes.
Because that's one of the docks that has a little trouble getting knocked from the
bottom. I got notice, actually. There was a number of correspondences I had when I was away that included there's something very large banging against the dock there. And
was that the dock?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, so... It's a good, I don't want to say dry run, because I don't think we've seen a King Tide storm surge that high since probably the 80s.
That was a good one, yeah.
But I think, if our general estimates are correct on sea level rise, these are the
kinds of things that are going to happen.
We need to think about. And I think to Carrie's earlier point, when we think about public space, including the golf course in Mountain View, we're luckily a little bit above sea level here, but climate impacts sort of have no boundaries. And so that might not be a sea level impact here directly, but there are others to be considered when we think about planning out community space into the future.
If you flood the intersection at Kearney and Sims Way, you then redirect traffic to Mountain View Commons.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because you bring it in Discovery Road. What else would you do? So you're right. Unexpected impacts are going to come and bite us.
Mm-hmm.